Cricket on the Brain 24/7, 365. Well, every Monday, Corbin Middlemass and ex-test opener Ed Cowan join forces on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
And I watch him bat and I think it's like Brian Lara on steroids.
Featuring the best analysis and biggest results.
We're not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this.
And the stories that have your cricket thread popping off.
So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that?
ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Because there's no off-season in cricket.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
France, Marshall. Yet one more semi-final. Yet one more gem of a goal from Kylian Mbappe.
Right now, there is an inevitability to France. Morocco was 34 games without loss. They looked pedestrian in the face of the French artistry. Kylian Mbappe missed the penalty, scored a screamer. Ousmane Dembele doubled the advantage. We're going to be talking about Mbappe's lightness and brilliance in the face of darkness and stress. We're talking Erling Haaland and Norway before the England clash. A couple of questions on Ange Postecoglou at his new Saudi club. What's the job after this job? Mark Schwarzer answers that question and more. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Socceroos legend Mark Schwarzer is here. Mark, Morocco, France. I felt like this could be a classic. It was routine from France in the end. A 2-0 victory and they roll on.
I was really disappointed in Morocco. I expected so much more. I mean, the best game in the tournament they had was the first game against Brazil. And they should have beaten Brazil. It was Alisson who made two brilliant saves right at the end of the game to preserve the 1 point that Brazil got. So I was expecting a lot more. And I think a lot of other people were expecting a lot more from Morocco. Yes, they were hindered with some injuries. Some key players were missing today. However, you felt that it was more of a containment assignment. Try and hold on as long as we can and maybe hit them on the counter. The countering didn't really happen. They were very, very much, it was one-way traffic for vast majority of the time. I think France had something like 22 shots at goal, 8 on target. Morocco had 1 on target the whole game.
Hakimi went for the near post, and truth be told, he wasn't especially close. Well, that was Morocco's first attempt at goal, and indeed their last attempt of the first half, the last kick of the ball.
And it was a pretty simple save for the goalkeeper as well. So, yeah, disappointing. But France, look, I say disappointing because I just expected more from Morocco. France are a phenomenal side. Wherever you look, I was thinking about what, as I was watching the game, going, well, what's your game plan? Do you try and nullify Mbappe, but then you've got to worry about Doué, then you've got to worry about Dembele. So if you're able to contain those three, then you've got Elise. Like, where do you stop with that French side? And then if, say, you're able to actually nullify those four players, then they can go, Bakola can come on, Cherki can come on and change the game completely as well. And then obviously they bring Marteta on because Mbappe goes off with a slight knock. And he's a different kettle of fish altogether because he's big, he's robust, he loves to roll off people's shoulders, he loves the physical element to it. Not as quick, definitely not. But runs in the box are really good. He should have scored. He should have had better delivery. Got let down a few times. But yeah, no, I said before, Tom, I fancied France as one of my favourites, and even more so now.
Kylian Mbappe, I mean, he was the headline. Missed a penalty.
Kylian Mbappe is denied. It was limp.
Scored an absolute ripper. 20 World Cup goals, 8 for the tournament, is leading the Golden Boots. Are we watching a career masterpiece in real time?
Yeah, I think he's just getting better and better, isn't he? And he's adding more to his game. He contributes a lot more. He seems like he's a more of a team player these days. And I think Luis Enrique's criticism of him when he was at PSG and then when he left, I think has really hit the nail on the head and actually probably gave him a little bit of a reality check. And I honestly believe he's been better. And today, look, I felt for him in the penalty the penalty situation, not the decision, because the decision was 100% a penalty. I think the referee lost control a little bit. And I think there must have been a point where the referee said, yes, it's a penalty. Then he goes and sets the ball up. And then he goes, no, wait, because they're checking something else. So, and then it happened a couple of times throughout that period of time. I think it was like 3.5-4 minutes that he had to wait. And I think that was poor. And had he have known that the check was going to be longer, I don't think he would have set the ball up. I think he would have walked away. I think he would have had the ball under his arm. Maybe he should have done that. Maybe he should have just gone and picked the ball up. But I remember there was a couple of times the referee pointed to say, put the ball back or, you know, get ready. And that's where I think he got let down. The referee should never have been in that, put him in that situation.
The goal that he did score, geez, it was a belter. And the way that he used the Moroccan defender as a kind of shield. It's kind of crazy that we came into this World Cup wondering if he was still the best player in the world off the back of a second straight trophy free season with Real Madrid. Like, I kind of feel silly that that's where my mind was at just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, but you know what? It's understandable because at Real Madrid, like, he individually had a very, very, like, a really good season, right? So his goal scoring record at Real Madrid this season was phenomenal. So I think it's rightly to think that with France, is it now not necessarily going to fall into place? Is he going to contribute more? Is he going to work more for the team? And I think he's shown already at this tournament, right from the off, that he is. And the understanding between him, Doué, Lise, and Dembele is on another level. And I think he's leading the line. He's the captain. The goal was phenomenal.
Doué. Mbappé! Simply irrepressible.
The angle of which he lined it up, the way he used the defender, when you see the view from behind Mbappé, when he strikes the ball and it's starting outside the line of the post and it then still goes into the side netting, it was a phenomenal strike. And, I mean, it gave Bono zero chance to save it. World class. I mean, they're the moments, right? They're the moments you're expecting or hoping that the superstars shine, and Mbappe certainly shone at that moment.
The way he's carrying himself as well, I feel like there's a lightness to Kylian Mbappe. I mean, this is a guy who has been booed by his own supporters at club level, who's been the target of racist attacks from a Paraguayan politician making, like, reprehensible statements that's been picked up by global media as a consequence. He's carrying global scrutiny. Like, how is it that it seems to me he looks so light and so happy?
Yeah, it's a shame because I think what I'm going to say is that I think that he's had to take all that stuff in his stride throughout his whole career, and he's had to deal with it. He's had to learn how to deal with it and how to move on from it. And unfortunately, it is going to be an ongoing issue that we're going to have racist remarks from very few certain individuals, which is unacceptable and should be called out. And Mbappe's at a position in his life where he's confident, he has the support, he has the ability and the position to call people out, and rightly so. And the world is reacting in favor as well, in general. I think for a guy that has been in situations, look, if you can get through a season at Real Madrid or two seasons at Real Madrid where the fans are booing you, your own fans are booing you, and you're still scoring 30, 40 goals a season, that tells you everything about his own mental strength. Obviously, captain of France, the expectation is that, certainly in France, is that France win the World Cup. Every tournament they're in, they expect to win it. So that in itself carries an enormous amount of pressure and weight on their shoulders. We saw Messi in the previous round, in the quarterfinal round against Egypt. The pressure that was on his shoulders, round of 16 game, the pressure that was on his shoulders, the release, the emotional release after that game, the crying, the players crying, because they felt like they were possibly going to be out of this tournament. So there is enormous amount of pressure on these guys. And I think with social media and the way the world is now, it's getting greater and greater with each tournament.
You've worked with Jose Mourinho. That's going to be Kylian Mbappe's next coach. How are you seeing that union? What will Mbappe, should he be expecting?
Well, look, I think he's a superstar, right? He's a world-class player who scores an abundance of goals. So how can we get the team? I mean, I can imagine Jose Mourinho be thinking, right, how am I getting my team to play with an Mbappe in his side that's still going to score 40 plus goals, but other players are going to contribute, and we're going to be difficult to break down. We're going to win games, and we're going to win tournaments. They're going to win the Champions League and all those sort of things. And someone like Jose Mourinho has the know-how, has the skills, has the experience to do that. So for me, like, he's one of those players that, without being guaranteed, but close to being guaranteed, he has to start every game when he's able to. But by the same token, if Jose feels like he's not pulling his weight and not contributing in the right way, I'm sure he'll pull him up for it. And I'm sure he'll let him know. And I'm sure he'll, if he doesn't change, he'll let him know by changing the team if he has to. That's just Jose Mourinho. You know, he's confident in his own ability, but he also can manage superstars. We've seen it time and time again.
Still got a World Cup to go through before I get to La Liga, so I should probably just rein myself in and concentrate there. Spain looms next, in all likelihood, for France. I know they've still got to get past Belgium, but I'm just interested in the fact that they've gone 560 minutes without conceding a goal at a tournament where it has rained goals. They've had an umbrella. So assuming they get past Belgium, do you feel like that's the kind of defence that could stifle this sort of French artistry?
Look, I think what we can't do is get ahead of ourselves, right? And I think Belgium's going to present Spain with their biggest challenge yet. I think they've seemingly, and I know it was against the US, and I think the US were one of the weaker teams in that round of 16 group of teams. The expectation from me was certainly Belgium was going to win the game comfortably. They got extra motivation, as we all know why, and they delivered. I think Belgium, if they can reproduce that kind of level, of course, it's a different opponent in Spain. They've got the ability to hurt Spain, and I think they've got a better system, a better setup. You see the Belgian manager not afraid to leave Kevin De Bruyne, Doku on the bench. He's not afraid to make those big changes, unlike Portugal. So I think this Belgium side is better equipped to try and get something against Spain. That's not to say they will, but I think they're in a better position to do so. So they're going to be, I think they'll pose as the biggest threat so far for Spain at this tournament. I still believe Spain will be too good because I think they're such a good side. And like you said, defensively, very difficult to break down. But I think, and they've got goals as well going forward. Lamine Yamal, still we haven't seen the Lamine Yamal that we saw at the Euros. And this is the moments where now you expect these sort of players to come into their own and shine. So if all goes to plan and they do get through a very tough Belgium, yeah, I mean, it's going to be one hell of a semi-final, isn't it, if it's going to be Spain against France.
Here's Dembele. Ousmane Dembele has hit the bottom corner. And France are heading for the final four.
And look, if Belgium beat Spain and Belgium get into that semi-final, I mean, equally an incredible game, because that means that Belgium played really, really well. And that means Belgium are hitting their form, their top form at the right moment. So either one that gets through, it's going to be a fantastic game.
I failed to talk about your favourite Frenchman, Michael Olise, the 24-year-old Nigerian, Algerian, French and British heritage based player. Arguably the most creative player ever developed in England. People who know much more about the game than me are making that claim. Playing for France, West London raised. Is there kind of funny irony in the fact that in this sort of golden generation of English playmakers like Saka, Bellingham, etc., maybe the best one of all is playing for France?
It's an interesting question, debate, discussion regarding Michael Olise, and it's the one that got away kind of thing that's been touted around quite a lot. The kid said from a very young age that he was French and he wanted to play for France. He always felt mostly French. So for me, that's where I expected him to play. I always expected him then to play for France because it's where your heart is, where you feel most of an affiliation with. Where's your passion? What does it feel like to stand in front of that national anthem and listen to the national anthem, sing the national anthem? And that's not to say that he doesn't like England. I'm sure he loves it in England, but his heart really truly is with France. So I feel for England, but that's also the beauty of, well, we used to be part of the EU, right? So people you could move around and go through different systems and academies and flourish and develop and become phenomenal footballers. And look, I'm glad that I got a chance to see him play in the Premier League, but I'm also glad that I get a chance to see him play quite often in the Bundesliga live. And you know, the guy is an absolute superstar, and I think there's still more to come from the guy as well. So it's a shame he's not playing for England, but would we see the same Michael Olise if he played for England than we do see the one that plays for France because of the kind of players he has around him? I don't quite think we would have the same kind of an effect. I think this French side is so well suited to a Michael Olise, the way he plays football.
It's really interesting to think of it like that, like as though they help him unlock another level that maybe wouldn't suit stylistically with someone like England. Speaking of stars with English roots who have been starring elsewhere, Erling Haaland, born in England, has given a media conference with Norway ahead of his huge clash with the English coming up. He's got 7 goals for the tournament. He's winning the World Cup off the pitch, I think, with his social media content. Like, it's hilarious. I love that clip the other day of him taking the piss out of his teammates who were giving him a hard time for drinking water.
Look at this loser.
Look at this loser.
Drinking water.
They complain when I order this, but when I score the goals, then they zip it up.
It feels as though, like, we know this guy's a global superstar, but it feels like he's approaching even another level still. Do you feel like we could see something of a further evolution when he and Norway take on England in just a couple of days?
Look, they're there because they deserve to be there. They played incredibly well against Brazil. They knocked Brazil out. They deserved it. There's not a moment that I felt that. Of course, there were moments they rode their luck. Nyland was insane in goal for Norway in a phenomenal game. 35 years old, plays at Sevilla. They struggled through the La Liga last season, but he was phenomenal in that game against Brazil. They're going to need him to play well once again. There's no doubt about it. But then England are going to need Jordan Pickford to play well, I believe, to have a chance to get past Norway.
I think there's some clear favourites out there. England's one of them. So I think all of you should put every single pressure on the English lads.
Whenever you've got a player of Haaland's ability, and then the team is so set up and works incredibly hard, and they've also not just got, it's not just about Haaland. You know, Ødegaard, of course, is someone that is really well suited for this Norway side going forward. I think they're a real threat. Obviously, Haaland's one of those players. You watch him in that first goal against Brazil. He's walking, he's not even putting a sweat on, and then there's a key moment. He just switches on. He engages, and there's a turn of pace. There's a movement. It's not rocket science. It's just that incredible turn of pace and movement. And I think that's what's really difficult to deal with. And Norway are set up well enough that they accept that you're not maybe necessarily going to get a real lot from him off the ball. But then saying that, late in the game, he was back in his own yard box, defending well, heading balls out of that danger zone on the six-yard box from corners. Look, that's what you expect from him. But I like the Norwegian side. I like the way they've played football. I like the way they've set up. And, of course, when you've got a player that's that prolific and that good up front, you just got to give him the right service at the right time, and he's going to make the runs. He's going to make himself available in that final third. And he's got pace to burn as well, so you've got to be careful of those balls over the top, off the shoulders. He is a phenomenal goal-scoring machine.
Outside of the Football World Cup, but looking at Australian football, Ange Postecoglou, he's signed at Al Nassr. Like, he's going to earn life-changing money. He will coach probably Ronaldo if he doesn't retire, which I don't think he is actually expected to, and Sadio Mane, a whole bunch of other high-quality players. But I'm sure Australian fans probably would have liked to have seen him at a club that is in Europe. What do you think that this move tells us about Ange's career right now?
It's really hard to be critical in any way, shape or form, because what Ange has done, pioneered the management, Australian managers overseas, you know, managing the Premier League, won the Europa League with Tottenham, being so successful at Celtic. I'm not going to lie, I was slightly disappointed to hear the news. I totally understand it. Look, life-changing money. And you can't begrudge anyone who decides to make that decision and go and manage a club, wherever it be, if they're offering a lot of money. I dare anyone to try and turn that down, because unless you're in that position, it's very, very difficult. And I can only imagine it must be a real difficult decision to make. But I am disappointed from a perspective that I feel that he could give so much more still at an elite level. And so clearly the Saudi League is not the elite level. I don't care what anyone tells me. Yes, they've got some really, really big name players, and one could argue the vast majority of them are at the back end of their career. There are certain levels, yet there's some good football being played. There's some lot of goals and so on scored. But in general, you know, it's a league that's trying to build. It's trying to establish itself.
The most important thing for me is during my whole career, I've enjoyed taking on new challenges, new competitions, working with different people and growing from that. So it's another opportunity for me to test myself in a new environment, in a new country, with a new team. But it's not just about winning. It's about how you win. Yeah, how you play your football.
I would have loved to have seen him still stay in Europe and play, you know, managing one of the top five leagues in the world rather than go and take the money. But like I said, it's difficult you can't criticize anyone who does that because of the life-changing nature of it.
Could I ask, though, the next job? What would be the next job after this job? Because I think anyone in any career trajectory thinks about the job after the job.
You know, and the thing is, maybe going away for a little bit will give him another opportunity to go to another club in the Premier League, as an example, because he's been in the Premier League. He's won a trophy. He's won a European trophy with Tottenham. First trophy in their 40 years for the club in Europe. First in over like 20 odd years, full stop. So that in itself, and, you know, we know all what people used to call Spurs and team that, you know, would get to finals and always lose and so forth. And, you know, he delivered, and he said he would deliver in his second year, and he absolutely delivered. I thought it was very harsh for him to lose his job. You know, win a major trophy, European trophy, qualify for the Champions League, and he loses his job because they finished 17th, which they had to sacrifice because of all the injuries they had to win a European trophy. So I feel for him. But we've seen it with Nuno Espirito Santos go to Saudi, spend a year or two in Saudi, and then all of a sudden get a job back in the Premier League. It depends on the level, right? So maybe there's still a chance for Ange, if he so desired at some stage, to come back to Europe and go to another club in Europe. Whatever the offer is or the contract that he's signed, I'm sure it's a lot of money, and that's why that was obviously an overriding factor in making that decision, I'm sure. I hope. And look, there is a pathway. People do it. We've seen it now. The manager he's replaced has now got the Portugal job. They only spent 1 year in Saudi. Ange has signed a two-year contract. Let's see what happens. There's no reason why Ange couldn't end up back one day in the future. Maybe, who knows, even with a national team, Australian national team. You never know. There's every chance that could happen at some stage down the track. But let's hope he's still got a pretty long career in management. And hopefully, I hope that he ends up back in Europe at one of the big leagues sometime soon.
Three more quarterfinals to go at the FIFA Men's World Cup. France, the first through to the semi-finals. Next up is Spain v Belgium. Look forward to talking to you after that game, Mark Schwarzer. I've already written the Belgians off. You feel like they've got a better chance? Can't wait to catch up with you after that fixture. Schwartz, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Today's episode was produced by Declan Byrne. Thanks to SBS and Al Nasser for the extra audio used in this episode.